Audio Service, National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for July 2012. This is issue number 328. Our address for the DX Audio Service is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805. Email address for general inquiries is fvobe@realoldiesradio.com. That's F-V-O-B-B-E at realoldiesradio.com. And my phone number for short calls is 419-228-6223. A yearly cassette subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S. Canadian members is $28. To subscribe or renew, make a check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated. And send them to me at the address that is mentioned, or you can log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using PayPal. If you're on the internet, you can sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service in MP3 format. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with PayPal. Subscribe only if you're able to download and navigate a website without anyone's assistance. And we have something very special to tell you on this edition of the DX Audio Service, so stay tuned. Don't skip over any part of the magazine because you might miss it and it might pertain to you. But right now, here's the AM Switch.
Welcome to the July 2012 edition of AM Switch. Let's jump to Volume 79, Issue 27, and call letter changes on 880 kHz. KJOJ in Conroe, Texas becomes KJOZ. 1230 KTJK, Del Rio, Texas is now KLTO. 1250 KDNZ, Cedar Falls, Iowa changes their calls to KCFI. And 1560 WINT, Melbourne, Florida, is now WLZR. We have a lot of construction permits on the air, so get ready. 540 KMLB, Monroe, Louisiana, is on with U1, 4,000 watts day and 26 at night. They were U4, 5 kilowatts day and a kilowatt at night. But KMLB has a pending application for U1, 1,500 watts day, 65 night. 890 KGME, Fountain, Colorado, a new station on the air with U4, 5,000 watts day and 580 watts night from six towers located about 25 miles north of Pueblo, Colorado, and south-southeast of Colorado Springs. The two patterns are identical, with major lobes to the north-northwest and south-southeast and a minor lobe off to the west. Reportedly, the new format is adult standards and talk. On 970 WFQY, Brandon, Mississippi, has their CP on the air with U1, 350 watts daytime, 90 watts at night. They were U4, 1,000 day and 91 at night. 1050 WSMT, Sparta, Tennessee, is on with U1, 950 watts day, 170 night. Formerly U1, 1,000 watts day, 181 at night. 1060 WQOM, Natick, Massachusetts, is now on the air with U4, with a daytime power of 50,000 watts, 2,500 watts at night. WQOM was U7. 40,000 watts day, 3,500 night, and critical hours power of 23,000 watts. 1190 KQQZ, Fairview Heights, Illinois, has their CP for U4, 25,000 watts day and 650 watts night on the air. They were U4, kilowatt day, 22 watts at night. 1200 WINK, Pine Island Center, Florida, which is in the Fort Myers market, their CP for U4, 50,000 watts day and 1,000 at night is now on. They were most recently 10,000 watts day and 1,000 at night, U4. 1260 WWRC Washington, D.C. has their CP for U4, 25,000 watts day and 5,000 at night on the air. Their facility was U4, 5 kilowatts day and night. 1270 WSPR Springfield, Massachusetts CP for U1. Kilowatt day and 350 watts night is on the air. WSPR was U4, 5,000 and 1,000. 1340 KGGS Garden City, Kansas has their CP on with U1, 880 watts day, kilowatt at night. They were U1, 1 kilowatt day and night. 1410 WTIX Concord, North Carolina, has their CP on with U1, daytime power of 1,000 watts, nighttime power 67 watts. They were U1, 1,000 watts day, 182 at night. 1430 KZQZ, St. Louis, Missouri, has lit up their CP for U4, 50 kilowatts day and 5 kilowatts night. Their old facility was U4, 5,000 watts around the clock. 1450 KONP, Port Angeles, Washington, has their CP running. KONP is U1, 1,000 watts day and 910 at night from a new taller tower. And lastly, 1570 WNKX, Lobelville, Tennessee, has their CP for U1 on the air. They are now 1,000 watts day and 66 watts night after relocating from Centerville, Tennessee, with U1, 5,000 watts day and 77 at night. Let's look at FCC actions granted for requested changes of facilities. 820 WVSG, Columbus, Ohio, has their CP granted for U2, 6,500 watts day and 790 at night. This is the old WOSU-AM, which was sold to Catholic Radio. On 920 WURA, Quantico, Virginia, new station having a CP for U4, 7,000 watts day and 970 watts night, but not yet on the air. They filed for program test authority, meaning they were ready to go on. The FCC denied that request, as in the filing, WURA failed to provide certain critical information, so they may refile anytime soon. Those in the Mid-Atlantic region, keep an ear out. 1100 KQNM, Milan, New Mexico, is licensed for U1, 250 watts day and 20 watts at night. KQNM has filed several applications over the past few years, including one to move to Rio Rancho, another to move to 1090 kilohertz. They've now filed a silent STA so that they and KMIN 980 may co-locate to a new tower site. 1270 WQKR Portland, Tennessee, has been granted their CP for U1, a kilowatt day and 43 watts night from a new tower located just over the Kentucky-Tennessee border along I-65, just south of Bowling Green, Kentucky. WQKR was previously granted a CP for U4, 500 watts day and 29 at night in 2009 from a new two-tower site. The towers were built, and they were in the final stages of filing for authorization when the engineer left the project. Then they operated under an STA with U1, 500 watts day and 29 at night, when a subsequent study revealed they could operate with these just-granted facilities, and they proposed to dismantle the unused second tower. 1270 WSPR Springfield, Massachusetts, who we just mentioned in the CP's on the air section, had their CP granted for auxiliary operation from a new tower to be shared with WACM 1490 West Springfield, which we'll talk about in just a moment. 1280 WTMY Sarasota, Florida, licensed for U4, 500 watts day and 340 at night, has a CP for U1, 300 and 100. They have now filed for a special temporary authorization with U1, 100 watts day and 85 at night. 1340 WAML, Collins, Mississippi, had their CP granted for U1, 1,000 watts day and night from a new tower southwest of Collins, which is 60 miles northwest of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and they relocated from Laurel, Mississippi. And while we're in Mississippi, let's say hi to DXAS member Mark Jones. Hi! 1410 WSHY, Lafayette, Indiana, is licensed for U4, 1,000 watts day and 60 at night. WSHY has applied to go non-directional as U1, 270 watts day and 28 night, using the west tower of that array. They have filed for an STA to operate D1, 250 watts daytime only from that tower, while the work is being accomplished on the east tower. What qualifies as work was not defined in that filing. 1430 WRDN, Durand, Wisconsin, is licensed for U1, 2,000 watts day and 152 watts night. WRDN is operating under an STA with U1, 110 watts day and 7 at night, using a long wire on the roof of their studio. The station was recently sold, and the tower location was not included in the sale. The new owners have a CP for the same U1 2,000-watt day, 152 watts night from a new tower about 5 miles from the former site. And, oh, let's tip our AM Switch top hat to Mike Dukin as we slide through Durand. Okay, 1490 WACM, West Springfield, Massachusetts. Had their CP granted for auxiliary operation with U1, 1,000 watts day, 830 watts night, from a new tower to be shared with WSPR 1270 Springfield. If you recall from moments ago, we talked about WSPR 1270 relocating to the same site. The Big Wolf, 1490 WOLF, Syracuse, New York, has their CP granted for U1, 1,000 watts day and night. They were U5, 1,000 watts day and night. 1520 KYND, Cypress, Texas, has their CP granted for D4, 25 kilowatts day, 18 kilowatts night. They were D4, 3,000 watts day and 2,600 night, relocating to a new three-tower site about 20 miles east of where they were. 1540 WSIV, East Syracuse, New York, has their CP granted for U1, 1,000 watts day and 57 watts night, relocating to the WOLF 1490 site. And finally, 1590 WPVL, Plattsville, Wisconsin, has their construction permit granted for U2, 970 watts day, 470 watts night, from a new two-tower site northwest of the city of Plattsville. We have only two amendments to construction permits to report. 620 WSNR, Jersey City, New Jersey, presently licensed for U4, 3,000 watts day and 7,600 night, had a CP for U4, raising their power to 8,500 watts day and 5,000 night. This action has them relinquishing the CP and applying now for U4 and really raising power to 15,000 watts day and night. The application for the new station on 1030 in La Grande, Oregon, had a CP for U2, 1,000 watts day, 600 night. An amendment has been submitted for this still unbuilt station with the same U2, 1,000 watt day, 600 watt night at a different transmitter site, utilizing a slightly altered night pattern. La Grande is in the mountains of Oregon in the northeast corner, day pattern non-directional. The night pattern is a figure eight going north and south. Now let's look at applications. On 770, WEW, St. Louis, Missouri, had a CP for U4, 10,000 watts day and 200 watts night, but at present this permit is set to expire before local zoning issues have been completely resolved. They have chosen to voluntarily surrender the CP and refile for identical parameters. The requested facilities remain the same, U4, 10 kilowatts day, 200 watts at night, from a three-tower array using two towers, number one and number two during the day, and number one and number three at night. The site is near Collinsville, Illinois. Here's a call sign we haven't heard in a while, 930 KHJ, Los Angeles, California, applies to move their transmitter so as to co-locate at the tower site of KYPA 1230 and KBLA 1580. The site is up on Route 2 in Edendale, California. Their facilities will remain U2, 5,000 watts day and night, but it's still boss radio to me. The night pattern will be adjusted ever so slightly to the south-southeast. 1060 KBFL, Springfield, Missouri, applies for U1, 470 watts day and 19 at night. 1260 WWRC, Washington, D.C., has applied for auxiliary facilities of D1, 1100 watts daytime only. 1470 WCLA, Claxton, Georgia, applies for U1, 1,000 watts day and 170 watts night. And wrapping up the applications, on 1500 KBRN, Bourne, Texas, applies for U5, 1,900 watts day and 15 watts night. We have one amendment to applications, which will help out Fred Vobey with his DXing. 1390 WBLL, Bellefontaine, Ohio, is presently licensed for U1, 500 watts day and 81 at night from a tower located on Ohio's highest point. WBLL applied for D1, 500 watts daytime, changing their city of license to Grandview Heights. This amendment requests you 960 watts a day and 22 watts at night in the community of Grandview Heights. Grandview Heights is actually in western Columbus, Ohio. In fact, the Ohio State University is located just north of the transmitter site. It's also doubtful they'll actually be able to serve Bellefontaine from this location. Two applications for reconsideration. 1120 WKAJ St. Johnsville, New York has an interesting situation going on. This still unbuilt station initially was issued a CP in 2008 for U4 10,000 watts day and 400 watts night with Little Falls, New York as the city of license. Well, it appears there was no activity for almost 3 years. The time given to complete the action designated for any construction permit, except for the permit being sold in 2010, but no activity insofar as any construction. So the FCC has canceled the permit. Now the owners have applied for reinstatement. 1510 KSPA Ontario, California applied for city of license change to Chino with U7, 50 kilowatts a day and 6,000 at night, and critical hours power of 45,000 watts. That application was denied. Then they reapplied, addressing the FCC reasons for denial, and reverted the city of license back to Ontario, which is nowhere near Chino. Applications and construction permits dismissed. 1,000 kilohertz, KCEO, Vista, California, asked for a CP for U4, 5,000 watts day and 900 night. It has been dismissed by the FCC. KCEO remains U4, 2,500 watts day and 250 watts night. 1070 WNCT Greenville, North Carolina, applied for U4, 35,000 watts day and 10,000 night. So WNCT remains U4, 50,000 watts day and 10,000 night. 1470 WNAU New Albany, Mississippi, filed for U1, 2,500 watts day, 58 watts night. The FCC zipped this app, so WNAU remains 2,500 watts day and 500 night. Applications for new stations. A new station has been applied for on 780 in the community of Draper, Utah. They applied for U4, 1,000 watts day and 250 watts night. Lebanon, Oregon has a new station applied for on 1,100 kilohertz with facilities of U4, 2,500 watts day, 250 night. Here's a chance to hear Alaska and on a graveyard channel. A new station has been applied for on 1,400 in Juneau, U1, 2,500 watts day, 1,000 watts night. Interesting to note that no explanation or justification was offered in the application as to why they applied for a Class B station with 25 kilowatts on 1,400, but the FCC accepted it. We'll see if this flies or if it's held up on M Street. A new station has been applied for in Red Bluff, California on 1580 with facilities of U2, 3,000 watts day and a kilowatt at night. And finally, on 1580, a new station is applied for in Springville, Utah. The facilities will be U1 with a daytime power of 10,000 watts and 570 at night with critical hours power of 10,000 watts. Finally this month, let's hear in the R what's happening. Returning to the airwaves, we have KXOR 660 Junction City, Oregon. Back on with Spanish Religion. KYWN 890 Meridian, Idaho. Back on with the talk format. Talk 890. KWAP 1430 Wasilla, Alaska returns to the air, and so does WQTM 1480 Fairbluff, North Carolina. Back with sports from Yahoo Sports Radio and the slogan Sports Radio 1480. These stations are reported as silent. KMUL 830 Farwell, Texas. KSEW 950 Seward, Alaska. KICA 980 Clovis, New Mexico. KYET 1170 Golden Valley, Arizona, and WDKD 1310 Kingstree, South Carolina. The cash register at the FCC is ringing with fines. WJTB 1040 North Ridgeville, Ohio, $10,000 for failing to maintain a management and staff presence at the main studio. WIPS 1250 Ticonderoga, New York, $1,200 for failure to file for license renewal in a timely manner. By the way, the FCC dinged this station again as it has been deleted from the FCC database. KCRX, 1430 Roswell, New Mexico, fined $8,000 for failure to ensure the operational readiness of their emergency alert system equipment. WELZ 1140 St. Paul, Virginia, along with WELZ FM, has been fined $20,000 and granted a license renewal for 4 years instead of the usual eight for failing to retain all required documentation in their public inspection files. KZMX 580, Hot Springs, South Dakota, a $21,500 fine, which also applies to KAMX FM, for failure to comply with the FCC's main studio, public inspection file, and equipment rules. And Pacific Empire Radio Corporation, owners of KLBM 1450 and KYBQ-FM La Grande and KBKR 1490 and KKBC-FM Baker and KJRT-FM Elgin, Oregon, facing a possible $25,000 fine for public inspection file violations. Our thanks to Tim Noonan, Upper Midwest Broadcasting, and Radio World Online for tips and information. Remember, if you hear a silent station coming back on the air or a station going off, or an oddity on the air, or maybe an AM pirate, call the Musings line at 419-741-0205. I'm Dave Alpert, and now here's Mark Durenberger with the DX Audio Service Bandscan from the Minnesota compound of the DX Audio Service.
National Radio Club.
Thanks, Dave, and hello, folks. Gosh, it's hard to believe we're in the middle of summer already. But that means it's time for our Midsummer Madness, our short break from the Bandscan to answer your requests. Today, shortwave interference examples, a bit from Sea Crane about reception, and a few more of those on-air bloopers you've asked for. Leading off, as they say in baseball, here's an edited excerpt from an offering by Radio Canada International to help folks listen to and identify types of interference. While this was written for the shortwave listener, some of it's applicable to the AM broadcast band as well. Radio Canada International.
The first two interference examples are adjacent channel interference, or splatter, and jammer splatter, or spread. Adjacent channel interference is caused by a strong signal from a station on an adjacent channel spreading over or splattering onto the signal to which you're tuned. In the case of jammer splatter, the station on the adjacent channel is a jammer. Now here are the examples. First, adjacent channel interference. Now, an example of jammer splatter or spread. Now, our third interference example is direct jamming, and this is a channel which has a jammer directly on it. There's certainly no difficulty in recognizing this sound. With this type of interference, there is very little one can do, although a highly directional type of antenna could be of some help. Now, here's what direct jamming sounds like. Interference example number four is from radio teletype. This is a high-speed mechanical sender transmitting a series of coded pulses. If this is co-channel with the wanted signal, you will have a difficult time trying to reduce or eliminate it. Radio teletype interference. Example number five is co-channel interference. In this example, you can distinguish two stations both fighting for the same frequency. There is really no effective way of reducing or eliminating this type of QRM, as in the case of example number four, unless one has a high-quality professional communications receiver and a highly directional antenna array. Here now is an example of co-channel interference. Example number 6 is also co-channel interference, but if you listen closely, you can distinguish 3 stations on top of each other. The next 2 types of interference you will hear are heterodynes, high-frequency and low-frequency heterodynes. These are caused by the beating of different carrier waves from different stations. This type of interference can be reduced considerably if you have a fine-tuning facility on your receiver.
Jamming has always been an item of interest. Here's an excerpt from a 1970 broadcast of Radio North Sea International, the pirate that broadcast with 100,000 watts from a ship in the North Sea, and it was the progenitor of Radio Caroline. The station took on the British government and lost. You'll hear some references.
International apologizes to you, our listeners, for the interference heard on our transmission. This illegal jamming is directed from the Labour government and organized by the post office. This action is meant to discourage us from providing you with our normal service. However, R&I shall make every effort to continue programs as usual. This is Radio North Sea International.
Back to radio reception. The famous radio manufacturer Seacrane publishes informal advisories from time to time to help listeners get better reception. It ties in nicely with the various columns we broadcast on how to identify and eliminate noise. After all, at the end of the day, you can hear the weakest signals on the air if noise isn't in the way. The Seacrane letter reads in part as follows. The first thing to consider if you're getting poor AM reception is the building around you. Brick, cement, and metal-framed structures can impede AM reception enough so to silence a signal that you might easily pick up in your car. If you're listening in a building that blocks reception or causes a lot of interference, don't despair completely. There are some things you can do. If you have a portable radio, use it to find out where you get the best reception. Tune to a weak station and just walk around your listening area until you get the least interference. That might give you an ideal spot to put your radio. If that doesn't work, you can also try attaching an external antenna. Though some radios come equipped with excellent AM antennas, many do not. Those radios might call for some additional hardware, like an external wire antenna. But that works only if you have an external antenna jack on your radio. One of the easiest ways to improve your AM reception would be to get your hands on the twin coil ferrite AM antenna. It has a twin coil ferrite inside the antenna, and it boosts reception enough to pick up stations you couldn't hear at all without it. But even if you have a twin coil ferrite AM antenna, there are other concerns to keep in mind when trying to reduce interference. Dimmer switches, computers, hair dryers, fluorescent lights of any kind, street lights, power lines, just about anything electrical can interfere. To find out if your reception's being compromised by something plugged into your AC, try disconnecting things one by one and seeing how much that reduces interference. If it's coming from the power lines, you might gain relief by running your radio on batteries, or you can try plugging it into another outlet. You should also keep in mind some things about AM radio listening in general. The ferrite rod in your radio works best when it is perpendicular to the AM signal you're trying to capture. That means you can sometimes improve radio reception just by turning the radio on its axis. You may also want to learn more about the stations you're listening to determine whether their power changes at sunset. After sunset, you may have to move your radio to a new location. As we said, one of the toughest places to get radio reception is inside an office building. If you work in an office and have terrible reception, here are some possible fixes for you. The simplest, of course, to put a radio in a window. If you can't do that, however, you still have other options. First, a CC Radio Plus, with its sensitive AM capabilities, is often enough to improve your reception. If you've already tried that, you might want to go the next route, running a wire from your radio to an antenna in a window. Running a coax cable, like TV cable, from your radio to a well-situated antenna just might do the trick. Two antennas to consider for this type of set are the AM Twin Coil Ferrite AM antenna and the FM Reflect antenna. But what if you can't imagine setting up a bunch of wires in your office, or you can't run a cable to the window? Well, then you can go wireless. At home, I have a CC radio with a twin coil ferrite AM antenna set right next to a window, and attached to the headphone jack of the CC radio is an FM transmitter. I use the FM transmitter to send a clean, clear signal, an AM signal, to other radios throughout my home, even the cavernous bathroom. At night, I also use the combination of the CC radio and the twin coil ferrite antenna and send that signal to other radios that don't get very good reception. If you opt for the FM transmitter solution, you can expect about a 70-foot range in an office building, and that range will probably drop by about 10 feet for every wall the signal has to pass through. Whatever combination you decide to go with, there are many reasons to include the CC Radio Plus in your setup. Say you like to listen to two different stations at different times of the day. Instead of getting up and tuning the channel, you can program the CC Radio Plus to switch automatically to a different station at a set time. AM radio reception is situational, and it can call for a lot of trial and error experimentation. The information C. Crane provides is by no means exhaustive, and it's meant merely to give you some guidelines in how to improve your radio listening. If you have some suggestions that you'd like to pass on to others, please call C. Crane at 800-522-8863. We'll post them in a follow-up article. We're especially interested in any homemade solutions you might have come up with for improving AM reception. And this edited information is from a bulletin issued by the C. Crane Company.
Keep listening to ABC.
See you again next week.
This is the ABC Radio Network. Work.
Ah, yes. Time for our blooper parade. What was that one again?
This is the ABC Radio Network. Work.
Our friend Jurgen Nash from WCCO had such a mellifluous voice, and his laugh just got you, as we've demonstrated over the last couple of years, and we've had some requests for more. Here's Jurgen with Farm Director Maynard Spies, who had a great laugh of his own, as you'll see. It's 6 o'clock in the morning on WCCO.
Right now in the Twin Cities, 33 degrees, wind from the west, 14 miles an hour. The humidity is 69%, very light snow. The Weather Bureau radar indicates scattered light snow in the same location as at 5 a.m. Therefore, please continue to use the summary.
Which you threw in the wastebasket.
You should have thanked.
Wait a minute, I got it. I got it.
Had it in our little round file here.
Wait, At 5 a.m., the Weather Bureau radar indicates some patchy light snow in extreme eastern Minnesota. Holy smoke, if they had said use the one given at 4, I tell you, I'd have had it, because it would have been down another foot down in the wastebasket. Jeez, those are getting very cagey over in the Weather Bureau.
Lowell Thomas was the longest-running news broadcaster on the networks. He worked for both NBC and CBS. Here he is in the 1960s, trying valiantly to recover from a word picture he formed in his mind.
Problems up there in space? Oh, yes. Head colds for all three. Also a cabin full of crumbs and war puddles. Not to mention a lack of sleep, but everything considered, they reported still go for 11. Well, let's get back to Earth. A major legal victory today for George Wallace. Wallace won an order from the U.S. Supreme Court to place his name on the Ohio presidential ballot, thereby assuring the third-party candidate of official ballot status in all 50 states. Oh, I'm in trouble.
Then there was a CBS Morning News Roundup that ended with this feature.
Where else could the town of Denby Dale be located but merry old England? And where else would anyone think of baking the world's biggest pie? But now, look what's happened to the world's biggest pie dish. It's been sunk. The dish is a ton-and-a-half steel vessel, 18 feet long, 6 feet wide, and 2 feet deep. It will house a pie containing 3 tons of beef, 2 tons of potatoes, and several hundred gallons of gravy. Powered by an outboard motor, the dish was launched at the local canal yesterday and moored for the night in nearby Mirfield. Under cover of darkness, somebody got at it and it went to the bottom. This is Dallas Townsend reporting.
And finally, Jergen is back with a valiant attempt to get through a commercial for NECA, the National Electrical Contractors Association. WCCO was paid big dollars for these commercials, and they were delivered professionally, mostly.
Local electrical contractors who belong to the National Electrical Contractors Association, known as NECA, are men who take pride in your community. They are active in all facets of community life. Me and other electrical contractors, because I'm a radio announcer, not an electrical contractor.
Right, yeah.
But this chap and other electrical contractors have joined together, yeah, just a moment now, under the NECA seal to protect you from... You didn't set up. You get him back. I wish you'd stop that.
Don't blame me.
You're helping me.
Yeah,
get a man you know will do the job right. Your local NECA man, your NECA contractor. You'll find him listed in the yellow pages under the seal of the National Electrical Contractors Association. NECA, your guarantee of electrical satisfaction. Nice going.
Okay. Nice guy, those NECA guys, though.
Boy, oh, lovely.
No sight for him now. 8 minutes till 7. Twin City temperatures 45 degrees.
Well, we've breezed through another broadcast of summer stuff. Hope your summer's going well wherever you are right now. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. We'll see you just a bit later, like in about 30 days or so. Until then, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark.
And now, a DX Audio Service editorial. Here is the chief editor of the DX Audio Service, Fred Vobey.
And thanks, Doc. Now, this message is for all DX Audio Service members. It's very important, probably one of the most important things I've said in the last 25 years or so. It's mainly for those of you who subscribe via tape, but some of you DX Audio Service people might find this of interest as well. Last month, I hinted to a possible dues increase, and I think that we need to make some changes to our publication. The reason is postage increases. They've absolutely killed us. They've hit us very hard in the pocketbook. A decade ago, we had to raise the dues from $25 to $28 because our costs to U.S. members were $19.20. Now, that balance of $8.80 then went to pay for free replacement tapes when members' tapes were lost in the mail. It also paid the phone bill, paid for repairs to the duplicator, and other essential needs. Keep in mind that all the publishers and editors are volunteers. Nobody is paid for their services, and the club makes absolutely no profit. In the last few months, we've seen several postage increases. So now your $28 membership costs us $35.40 for members who are sighted, $49.80 for members in Canada, and $23.40 for members who are blind, living in the United States and getting their mail free matter. Now, if you do the math, you can see we're in deep kimchi. I realize that you, like I, are struggling in a bad economy, so I'm reluctant to just pass these costs on to the members, an amount which is probably too large to shoulder. So I'd like to propose something that's rather radical, a big change in the club, and have you contact me if you object. Now, before you pick up the phone or send a letter, listen very carefully to what I'm going to say, because I don't need to be barraged by telephone calls. First, I'd like to propose switching the DX Audio Service to an audio compact disc format. The technology is now advanced to a point where we can high-speed duplicate CD discs. And there are now mailers that qualify for a lower postage rate, and the duplicators have come way down in price. The only question I have is, Do we have any members in the club who do not have the ability to play an audio CD? If you do not have that ability to play an audio CD, I need to hear from you immediately. If you can play one with no problem, I don't need to hear from you. Secondly, I'd like to propose that we raise the dues by $2 for all members, which would help cover the initial investment of a CD duplicator, blank discs, mailers, etc. This $2 increase will come at the time you renew. Not now, but when you renew. I'm not going to say that after the investment is paid off that the dues will come back down, because I feel that when you're dealing with costs, especially those from the government post office, they're only going to go up higher. But if we do get a lower rate from the post office, such as the time when the Canadian Post Office dropped their costs, and we subsequently lowered the Canadian member rate, I'll be willing to cut the dues back down. But I wouldn't count on it, because you know as well as I do that postage rates are going to go up. But we could be surprised in that Mayan calendar thing and, you know, have rates go down. But here's my question. Will anyone in the club quit because of a $2 a year increase from $28 to $30 a year, keeping in mind that in 1985 we charged $25. Third, this applies to our blind members in the U.S. Please take the time to feel the top right corner of your envelope that your tape came in this month. If I know you're blind, I send your tapes via free matter. If you are blind and you have stamps on your mailer, you can save us $23.40 in expenses. Let me know if I need to change you from a stamped to free matter status. Finally, after we hopefully get things changed over, please promote our club and let us see if we can get our member numbers back up. Talk us up to people that you know who are interested in radio. Promote us on other talking books. Talk about us on websites and in forums. If your friends are on the internet, let them know about EDXN, which is a great way to download the DX audio service to your computer, iPod, Android, or any MP3 player. And if you find an article about radio in the paper or an audio source, please send it in. Be a member by participating and submitting material to the magazine, even your own. Now, one of the pluses to going to a CD format is that members of the audio service have traditionally received your audio service in a mono cassette format. This would mean that you would get your DX audio service in stereo, just like EDXN members do. And we're studying the costs on the compact disc media, but there's a possibility that we might be able to do two discs per month, which would mean we'd be able to lengthen the DX audio service. Again, this all depends on you, the members, whether you're going to stay with us or bail, or if you have the ability to be able to play a CD. Now, as you know, I started the DX audio service back in April of 85, and it was born from a friend telling me that he didn't have access to stories on radio, and it was shortly thereafter I found out there was a lot more people like yourself that wanted the same material, which is why we started the DX audio service in partnership with the National Radio Club. I think all the old-timers to the magazine can testify that the editors and myself have been fiercely loyal to the membership, and even in times of personal tragedy and problems, we've never missed a single issue. So I trust this means something to you, and you, along with other members, will help us so we can be with you for the next decade or two. If you have any comments, drop them on the Musings line. If you have any concerns, write them down on a letter or email and send them to me. Thank you.
Since April of 1985, this is the DX Audio Service, a nonprofit organization devoted to the radio listening hobby.
It happens sometimes Sunday night.
Someone has stolen KQV's call letters from the station.
I took the K. KQV call letters, and I've stashed them somewhere in Pittsburgh. Try and find them.
KQV wants their call letters back. As a reward, we're giving a brand new 1972 Firebird GT to the person who safely returns the KQV call letters. The KQV call letters are 6 inches high and 3 inches wide, and we know that the culprit has hidden them somewhere within the sound of my voice.
If you think you know where the KQV call letters are hidden, you've just won a 1972 Firebird GT.
Now, here is this hour's KQV call letter clue.
At this time, please turn over your tape to side 2.